Private jobs are still going away, but not as many.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's The Morning Open. Good morning, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Overhauling healthcare without the supermajority. And oh, the joys and the headaches of being so connected. All that ahead. First, where's Wall Street? The S&P is up by 0.33% right now. NASDAQ nearly 0.5%. And the Dow, about 28 points in the positive at 10,434. European shares have swung into positive territory as well. In Asia, shares were mostly higher today. The Hang Seng fell just a bit. We got word this morning private American employers laid off 20,000 workers in February. That's according to employment payroll company ADP. And the number of planned layoffs last month fell to their lowest level in 4 years, according to consulting firm Challenger, Gray and Christmas. Jobs, of course, at the center of an economic recovery. We're going to get some analysis this morning from Richard DeKayser, president of Woodley Park Research, with us live this morning from Washington. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Steve.
I want to start with this ADP report, which highlights private sector jobs. What about government and public jobs in the past month, Richard? Are those, do you think, making up for these private company layoffs?
Well, I think they will, Steve, and it's not clear how much. But we know that the government's hiring a lot of workers, the federal government, for conducting the 10-year census.
Yeah.
Between the first and roughly the seventh month of the year, they're probably going to put on 700,000-800,000 net workers. Some of that's going to show up in February. We can't be sure exactly how much. But that would have the potential to turn this negative print from the private sector into a more favorable one overall.
And I want to talk a little bit about Wall Street not moving much right now, just up under 0.5%, despite the fact that European shares overcame some steep declines earlier in the wake of Greece announcing this debt-busting package there. Investors have been pretty sensitive here at home to what's happening in Greece. What's going on now?
Well, the concern, of course, is that the Greek government would default on its debt. We seem to be stepping back from that brink a little bit. The fiscal program that they've announced is a tough one that increases the odds that they'll reduce spending and hence make good on their debts. What we're seeing in the markets, however, is relatively marginal movements of improvement. For example, the flight into U.S. Treasury securities, a flight to quality bid that we saw over the past month, is moving away a little bit. And that means U.S. interest rates are inching up ever so incrementally.
So you think investors then are sort of pretty much priced this in?
Yes, that appears to be the case. The big movements came over the past week and a half to 2 weeks. Today's news is really just incremental in that same direction.
Richard DeKayser, we thank you.
My pleasure.
Later today, President Obama will outline his plan to overhaul the nation's health care system. All indications are that his plan will use a legislative tactic that requires little or no Republican support. Here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
Reconciliation was created in 1974. It's a way to get difficult bills through Congress. Under the rules, bills can't be filibustered in the Senate, but the procedure is only supposed to be used with legislation affecting the federal budget. That can include a lot of bills. Jordan Lieberman publishes Campaigns and Elections Politics magazine.
You can make the argument that virtually anything that comes out of Congress, unless it's just a simple resolution, has some spending or revenue component to it.
That's the argument congressional Democrats are making about the health care overhaul. If all goes as planned, the House would pass the Senate health care bill first. Then House members would approve a reconciliation measure to fix the Senate bill. The Senate would then pass the legislation and send it to President Obama. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Wednesday, March 3rd, 2010, at marketplace.org. After years of expansion, the British Broadcasting Corporation says it's going to cut back some of its services. The taxpayer-funded broadcaster has been accused of caving into commercial rivals. From London, Marketplace Europe correspondent Stephen Beard reports.
The BBC runs its TV, radio and online empire on taxpayers' cash, a $4.5 billion a year subsidy. That's unfair, say commercial competitors like Rupert Murdoch. Now there's a general election in the offing. A Conservative government with less enthusiasm for the public sector could come to power. The BBC's decided to take preemptive action. It plans to shrink a little, to scrap two radio stations, and cut funding for its website by a quarter. Jeremy Deer is with the National Union of Journalists. He says the BBC is appeasing its commercially motivated rivals.
I think a lot of BBC staff are slightly sick of the BBC seeming to cave in every time someone criticises or attacks them. Inevitably, if they do that, they're going to end up smaller and more marginalised.
He says a national treasure is in jeopardy and there could be strike action against the cuts. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
As we talked about, Greece revealed major spending cuts today, the prime minister saying that Athens will cut bonus pay for government workers and hike the national sales tax to 21%. Now, the country's taking those steps to convince other European nations that Greece's budget problems can be solved. But the Wall Street Journal today reports that the U.S. is investigating whether speculators can be blamed for some of the Greek problems. According to this report, the Department of Justice is checking whether several hedge funds conspired to drive down the value of the European currency. Christopher Wirth has more from London.
Several hedge funds, including one owned by billionaire investor George Soros, have been told to preserve their emails and other records. The Justice Department wants to see if they made any deals that would amount to collusion in betting against the euro. In fact, investigators are specifically looking at a dinner in Manhattan last month where managers were urged to make big bets against the European currency. It's lost about 10% of its value since the end of last year. Some say these kinds of large trades are similar to those that helped bring down Lehman Brothers in 2008. Charles Baden Fuller of London's Cass Business School says he's not surprised that U.S. investigators have taken notice.
The circumstances for collusion are definitely there, if you know what I mean. These hedge funds are highly connected because they tend to share very similar locations like London and New York, often within quite short distances of each other.
But he says despite those close connections, he expects the inquiry will show that hedge funds don't collude in a legal sense, and proving that they do would be extremely difficult. In London, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
There's a Senate hearing today on the Environmental Protection Agency's annual budget that may turn into a debate over controversial climate regulations instead. President Obama's budget request for the next fiscal year includes $43 million in new funding to curb greenhouse gas emissions. But as Marketplace's Sarah Gardner reports from the Sustainability Desk, there could be a major pushback.
President Obama has vowed that if Congress won't regulate global warming emissions, the EPA will. But industry groups are lining up to oppose EPA regulation. 16 lawsuits have been filed, and critics in Congress are pushing resolutions to block it. Robert Dillon is a spokesman for Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska.
It's not a good time to unleash these kind of regulations on the American economy when we're still trying to recover from the worst recession in decades.
But William Becker, head of the National Association of Clean Air Agencies, says even if Congress stops the EPA, the fight's not over.
The industry who is opposing this is not necessarily going to win the battle because states will still retain their rights to move forward.
Coal State Senator Jay Rockefeller, a Democrat, plans to introduce legislation this week to postpone EPA carbon limits for 2 years. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
The Oscars are this Sunday, but subscribers of Cablevision in and around New York City may not get to watch it. Disney-owned ABC is airing the Oscars, and it's sparring with the cable company over fees. If the two can't reach an agreement by Saturday, ABC's threatening to go dark right before the awards ceremony. As Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports, it's hardly a cliffhanger.
It has all the makings of a good drama. Cablevision says it's already paying $200 million in fees for Disney programming. ABC's asking for $40 million more. And hanging in the balance, 3 million viewers who might not get to see the Oscars. Cablevision is taking its beef to the air.
Right now, Cablevision is trying to negotiate a new contract with ABC. In response, ABC is threatening to pull Channel 7 off your Cablevision system.
Spoiler alert, all the suspense will end just in the nick of time, says Porter Bibb of MediaTek Capital Partners.
This matter will go away. ABC will get a small amount of compensation from Cablevision, and the Oscars will run.
Bibb points out the same smackdown happened a couple months ago between Fox and Time Warner Cable just before the major college bowl games. He says the networks are losing ad money and viewers, and events like the BCS Championship and the Oscars are about the only leverage they have left. But the networks are holding a lot of cards, says media analyst Jack Myers.
The broadcast networks are still the most viewed programming in cable homes.
And because of that, we can all expect a sequel. perhaps around the March Madness basketball tournament. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
So, the next smash hit in social media, mobile applications that don't ask about what you're doing, but where you are. People like to use those apps because it connects them with their friends. But all that information comes at a price. From member station WBHM in Birmingham, Gigi Duban reports.
There's a saying, misery loves company. And being stranded at the airport for 8 hours ranks pretty high on the misery scale. But Jim Patillo, a Birmingham lawyer who recently was stuck at O'Hare, found a way to take the edge off.
Foursquare helped me find not only places to eat, not eat in the airport, but also kind of helped me commiserate with some of the other stranded travelers.
Foursquare is one of a growing number of location-sharing applications. Users can broadcast their whereabouts through check-ins on their mobile devices and connect with others nearby. But there's a risk. Patillo has checked in from home before, blasting out his home address with a map on Twitter. Afterwards, he says he realized that probably wasn't the smartest thing to do.
If I later broadcast, I'm in Chicago for the weekend, there's my home unoccupied. Those are some legitimate security concerns.
And that's exactly the point behind the new website, pleaserobme.com. The site compiles a list of Foursquare users who've recently checked in somewhere. Above the listings, it says recent empty homes. The creators of Please Rob Me say they don't encourage burglary. In a written statement, they say, quote, it was all about engagement with the privacy issue. In spite of the privacy concerns, it seems everyone wants a slice of the location-sharing pie. Take Yelp, for example. Stephanie Ichinose is communications director for the company.
Yelp is really all about connecting consumers with local businesses.
Since 2005, Yelp users have posted reviews of everything from restaurants to gas stations. But recently, the company added a check-in feature. Ichinose says that while the check-ins allow you to find out where your friends are or broadcast your own whereabouts, they're more about credibility. In other words, a reviewer who has checked in to the same place 15 times probably knows his stuff.
And so it just allows for, you know, another layer of trust.
And trust is something that many users of these mobile applications seem to have in abundance. In Birmingham, I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
And finally, Topeka, Kansas is now, at least unofficially, Google, Kansas. The mayor there temporarily changed the city's name in hopes of getting the internet giant, Google, to choose it as a test site for its ultra-fast connection. Well, this sort of stunt has been done before in Topeka, or Google. In 1998, the city changed its name to Topikachu in honor of Pokemon. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.